Blog Talk Radio.
So your conscience finally hits you, and you're feeling guilty.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a special Wednesday night edition of Daytime After Dark. I just want to say it's really, really cold in Seattle. So if anyone wants to go outside where they live, where they are getting snow, and do a snow dance for me, I would really appreciate it, because I know this is going to sound crazy, but I sort of want snow. I'm good. Okay, so tonight we have a really good guest, and I hope she's going to forgive me for mispronouncing her name, Kathy Skuggerberg. But you guys, she's amazing. She does this one act, you know, and she was in Scientology, and she left it, thank God, because everyone needs to leave Scientology, in my opinion. Absolutely, yes. And when they leave Scientology, they should just slap David McCavis. So here Kathy is. Hi, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Hi, Carly. How are you?
Good. I hope I didn't mess up your name too.
It's got 12 letters, so it's Schenkelberg, but it's a long name, so it's intimidating. No
well,
problem.
Well, yeah. I am so glad to do this interview, and I was watching some of Scream My Cans. I love that name. I mean, if I were you, I would have came up with a really more inappropriate name. Like, I don't know.
Can I tell you how that name came about?
Yes. I would love to know.
Yeah, my solo show, I was doing storytelling and spoken word pieces in bars and coffee shops, and I was doing little vignettes about Scientology in my nearly two decades in. And so I was out at a restaurant in L.A. with my agent at William Morris Endeavor, and we were having a drink and some appetizers. And I said to him, I got to think of a name. I was going to call it Bridge to Total Bankruptcy. And he said, squeeze my cans, and I literally got on GoDaddy and bought the domain name because it's, you know, if your listeners don't know what the cans are in Scientology, it's the e-meter. It's an electronic device like a lie detector, and they
mm-hmm.
use that in their counseling sessions. You're hooked up to you're holding these cans, which has electricity flowing through equivalent to that of a 9-volt battery. And so the cans, obviously, it's a pun. And then I put the alien hands over the boobs. Just to be saucy.
No, I love that. And, right before Leah went in my house, so I just kept reading more and more about people that I have left Scientology, and I've interviewed three or four people, and now you. And then this thing, in my opinion, I get it why they stayed in for as long as they did, because when you gain this lie detector test, people,
right?
You know, it's almost like brainwashing what they are doing, and then, you know, they just do that, and they don't want you to have any thoughts of your own or anything. And gosh forbid if you have depression or something. Oh, no, that's unacceptable. You got to go do vitamins and get some sleep, and it will be all better in the morning. Yeah, right. Yeah,
right. Well, that's a slow indoctrination, because when I got in the early 90s, it was, I didn't have the internet. I didn't have a computer. I mean, I got one, but I wasn't, there was no Google or anything. But it's, you know, when I, my first class or course, they call it, in Scientology was Ups and Downs in Life, and it was only $35. So you're surrounded by people who are telling you wonderful things, and you feel like you're a part of a group. But I wanted to join the Peace Corps, and I got introduced to Scientology. And by the third time, I met a person that I liked who I had done an audition with, and I went, you know, I should check this out. So it was a slow indoctrination at first. It wasn't until I got to the upper levels that I realized, holy shit, this is, you know, this is this would be a tough religion to leave. That's what I told the person who got me in.
I would have said a lot more bad words to them, because my question is, when you were in, and did they make you sign up in your contract?
No, because I was a public Scientologist. You see, the C organization is their staff. They're the elite staff that sign the billion-year contract. So you may have read or interviewed people that were in the organization.
Yes.
But see, I was making $300,000-$400,000 a year doing voiceover. They didn't want me to join the C, or they wanted that money was you know, that was the real deal. So I could afford to pay for things. And then, of course, I lost everything, but that's another story. And, yeah, so, no, I wasn't in the Sea Org. I was a public person. Like, in any church, you have the rectory and the priests and the
mm-hmm.
deacons and people that are – and then you have the parishioners. So I would be considered a parishioner.
Wow. No, I mean, I'm glad. I'm glad you were a parishioner. Had you been in the Sea Org, you wouldn't have had to do that Scientology. I mean, the mini-year contract. And then you, mm-hmm. you know, well, I mean, I don't laugh, but when people who I've interviewed are telling me about this mini-year contract, and
mm-hmm.
my mind goes, okay, I don't even know what I want for dinner next week. How am I supposed to sign my life? I mean, that's what I'm thinking. But
well,
then I...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then I said something to one of the people I had on, Sally Anugo was on recently, and I said to him, Sally, it's not that you were in a cult, it's not like you were in a religion. What you guys were in is brainwashing, and I think Scientology is a little brainwashing.
I didn't know that at first, but it's twofold. You have someone who signs a billion-year contract because they believe that this is the only hope for mankind, right? So they believe
mm-hmm.
that there are many, many lives after this, and they can pick up another body and figure things out. And that's what Scientology believes in. Now, I was raised Catholic and from a family of 10 kids. And when my brother Mike died at 19 in a car accident, I went to the funeral. And after the funeral, people told me, God wanted him. He was ready to be with God. And I, at you know, 13 years old, was like, I don't want that God. So I started searching out other forms of spirituality, because I thought, if God took my 19-year-old brother, then that's not the God I want to, you know, espouse to or follow. And it took me, and my family was never in Scientology, and I didn't find out until I got out how worried they were and how much research they did. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
it is a brainwashing, Carly. You know, in Scientology, I used to do seminars at the Celebrity Center in Hollywood. As an actor, I was successful in voiceover. I had some TV stuff. I'm not anywhere famous at all. Never. I just wanted to make a living and make my insurance. But I used
mm-hmm.
to do these voiceover seminars. And in Scientology, you're taught to think for yourself. They tell you what's true for you is true for you. Now, who wouldn't say, oh, good, I'll check this out. If I can just get up and go, no problem. But see, I disagreed with certain things in Scientology, especially when I read a book called Science of Survival, which had a
yep.
chapter on homosexuality. Now, mind you, I'm a jazz, I sing standards and jazz in nightclubs and back in Chicago where I lived and got into Scientology, and I sang in gay bars. I'm sorry. You're telling me that my gay friends are aberrated? And so I used to be brought into ethics to handle that. Well, I since found out that when they reissued the books, they had the new Golden Age of Tech books, that they took that chapter out because there was a lot of controversy in that, you know. So, but yeah, it's a slow indoctrination, Carly. It's not something you immediately, hey, I would have, if I got into Scientology now, I would have everything at my fingertips. I could Google, I could research, I could call people. I didn't have that, the luxury of that. If people get into Scientology now, they have all the information on the internet and they can so choose to decide, hey, I'm going to disregard this information or I'm going to not join. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I've always said that, you know, the mental health professional needs, you know, need to have an axe to grind with Scientology. They are this, for me, I've read too many stories where you depress in Scientology and you're not getting better. And you're feeling like crap, and then they want to audit you to get this out on you, you know, for you to feel better, and then you end up more in a dark hole than you were to start out
right.
with, and
everything,
then you're like,
right, mm-hmm.
yeah,
you get further and further. I'll tell you a funny story. I was in Clearwater where I did my upper levels, and for your listeners, the upper levels are above Dianetic Clear. So they're operating Thetan 1 through 7. And then when you get to 8, you go on a ship called the Freewinds. So I remember I was at the Sandcastle in Clearwater, right by Gulf to Bay in Clearwater, Florida. And I was walking back to this condo that I bought for my parents because I was spending so much money at the hotel, I bought a condo. And so I was walking back to the condo, and I tripped and I sprained my ankle. I literally sat down on the floor and cried because I knew it would cost me probably $5,000 to $1,000 just to find out what I did to pull that in. I was responsible for my ankle being sprained, not the crack in the sidewalk, not the shoes I was wearing, but me as a spiritual being was responsible for spraining my ankle. And I just cried because I was slowly burning through all my money. So anytime something would happen, you'd go, oh, this is going to cost me. So even sex for me, I was like, okay, I just will avoid sex because at some point it was always made, you know, like wrong or, and I can say this on your radio show, masturbation. Well, you're pulling in mental image pictures, which are aberrated. Well, if I'm not having sex and I'm an adult and I can't, you know, it's a natural thing in a body to want to relieve themselves or experience sexual desire.
Yeah.
I just was like, okay, well, I'll be celibate until I get done with this upper level. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's just like it is indoctrination. It's a slow burn. And you know what's really interesting to me? When you call yourself a religion and then you have people disconnect from their families and
exactly.
You follow people and you are really, it's a hypocritical thing. Look, when I got out of the church, I could walk right into the Catholic church with my mom and celebrate Mass. Now, am I a Catholic, a practicing Catholic? No, but I wasn't shunned. I wasn't disconnected from my family. So, yeah, there are all religions have their, you know, their things, but this was a real huge factor for me when I got out. I went, wow, you know, you say you're non-denominational, and yet the further I got in, the further away from God I got.
Yeah, I mean, when you were talking about your ankle, and I'm like thinking in my brain, wait, so you fall and you're crying, but you are crying a little of the pain. when you're really crying, like, oh, damn, sorry for swearing. Oh, damn, I really screwed myself up. It's going to cost me so much. It wasn't, I think you wasn't upset because, I mean, yeah, the pain hurt. But when you're like, oh, this is going to cost me so much money. And at that point, I would have lied, and I'm like, oh, my anger's fine. I didn't
do,
you know.
Yeah, but, you know, the meter never lies, but I figured it out later. I figured out how to manipulate the meter in the sense that if I created thoughts in my head about loving my daughter or my family or the cappuccino I was going to order or something, you know, like I would think up things in my head to create happiness or wonderful thoughts. So the needle on the e-meter, the which we call a lie detector, but it's, you know, it's called an e-meter, an electronic device. But I would create these thoughts in my head in order to get out of, you know, to make sure that my needle floated. But there was something I wanted to tell you. You know, my show Squeeze My Cans. You know, it's a 75-minute show, but I wrote it in 2015. We put it up at a solo festival in Chicago, and the review, I've been doing over 130 shows in the States and overseas, but the show has never, most reviews say she doesn't bash Scientology. She tells her story and lets the audience decide, because audiences are very smart. They can figure it out. I merely talked about how I got in, when I was in, and why I got out. So, and then the numbers, because I spent $983,000, and I have every receipt, every invoice for the money I spent over a 14-year period, although it took me another 5 years to get out. So, yeah, by the time I wanted to get out, I was like, it took me a while to get out, which I've heard from other ex-Scientologists the same thing. It's like, you know, because I had an agent, a manager who were Scientologists, my friends, my chiropractor, my tax guy. I didn't have family in, so I didn't suffer in the sense as some people who have lost family members from disconnection or death. I'm thankful for that, but I did lose a slew of people. But guess what? They weren't my friends anyway. So the ones that came to my aid when I was on food stamps about 4 or 5 years ago, the food I got left at my door, the electricity being turned off, those are the true friends, or even people I didn't know, didn't ask for money, didn't do a GoFundMe, didn't do anything, just merely kindness. So.
Well, yeah, and like you said about families, you know, being disconnected, but since you were, you know, in it for a while, my thing I wanted to ask you, about 3 or 4 years ago, 5, when they had that thing about the gay people in California that,
Paul
that
Haggis,
thing that they would,
the Rolling Stones?
Yeah, no, to
the
make,
prop.
It
was prop, the prop?
Yes, to make
proposition,
gay marriage legal or not.
Right.
And and I was watching Leah's show, and Paul Haggis, you guys, the really good director, said his daughter was a lesbian and sent him the thing, said, Dad, didn't you know they are opposing this? You know, and I'm thinking in my head, so, yeah, you know, in my head, I'm like, wait a moment, you are saying you love people, you're saying that gay people, okay, you're saying that out to the media, but then you're going to outright lie about it? I mean,
right.
Okay, if you're not, you know, for something, okay, I get that, but you go and lie, people. I think, and when I was reading your story, why that? So what was the whole thing about auditioning to become Tom Cruise's girlfriend without you or without someone else?
No, that was me. In 2004, the church does these videos to disseminate Scientology to non-Scientologists, and or they do training videos to teach Scientologists when they're on their course how to run a meter, how to work the meter and stuff like that. So I was called in to the Celebrity Center Manor Hotel to audition for a training video for a part of the church that's out in Hemet, California, called Golden Era Productions. So right behind the reception desk, I walked up the stairs. There was this room, and I went in. There was a camera, and I was asked like five questions, and the last one it was like, where are you from? Your name, where are you from? What level are you on in Scientology? What type of job? And what do you think of Tom Cruise? Now, when I was in Scientology, I was not a big fan of Tom Cruise in general. You know, I liked Risky Business. I love Nicole Kidman and her work. But I literally, as my mother said, you talk around your foot. Like my foot was inserted in my mouth. I moved it over and said, I can't stand the guy. He's a narcissist and insecure. And I was asked to leave. So I walked out, and there was a woman named Brooke. I won't say her last name, who said, how did you do? And I said, it was fine. She goes, you know, that was an audition to be Tom Cruise's girlfriend. And I said, well, I didn't get the gig because of what I said. But, it wasn't until later, too, that I found out other people had auditioned or celebrities were vetted or groomed. It's kind of effed up when you think about it. I mean, you're a big celebrity. Why should you have a problem? But they wanted a certain type of person. And he's the poster child, you know, he's the poster child for Scientology, which I don't find a very good poster child because that's just my personal opinion. Yeah.
No, you're right, because I've been saying this for the past couple of years that growing up, I thought he was so good in Top Gun and all that. Mm-hmm. But the moment he went on Today's Show and told Brooke Shields how wrong it was to take medicine when she had postpartum, that is like, Tom, you're an asshole, you're a jerk, you're not a woman. And then I think I got so mad with the interview with that. I just remember turning off my TV and throwing a Kleenex box at it because I'm like, what the hell was that?
Go ahead.
No, and the thing is, I'm sorry, people, but Tom Cruise is not even on the A-list movies anymore, people. Wake the hell up. All Tom Cruise cares about is wiping David McCabe's ass and trying to live Scientology. I'm sorry. I think that is disgusting. I think what he had done. And then to top it off, I wanted to ask you your feelings about this. When John Travolta's son had autism, but they never will admit it and everything. And when John Travolta.
John's son, Jet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when his son died and, he had autism or he was autistic. And then I'm like thinking, because I babysat for two families that had it, and the little boy always had a seizure, but they were giving him seizure medicine and it was okay. And then when I heard how he died from being in the bathroom, hitting his head on the bathroom, somewhere in the bathroom. And my thing was, okay, you know your son's autistic. You know this. Oh, you don't want to admit it. But then, you know, he was having seizures, and he was probably in that room dying by himself, and you would not get him the medication because, God forbid, Scientology told you that was wrong, and, you know, you just have to give him exercise and love. that mm-hmm. is another
yeah.
problem, I think, people who have with Scientology. When you heard about what were you thinking when you heard about
John's,
that?
John's sister Margaret is I haven't talked to her in a while because she moved out of L.A., but she was my friend, is my friend from Chicago. And I knew that she was on vacation or they were on vacation when it happened. But, yeah, no, I totally think it was disregard for taking care of him medically. I think the church indoctrinates you to think that, you know, especially about psych drugs and certain medication. I, of course, went to the doctor and got normal checkups, but I sure didn't take aspirin before I had to be on class or course. Yeah, no, I think that the church, and this is just my opinion, but it's covered in many, many, you know, articles on the internet and elsewhere, that they cover up, especially celebrities. They protect celebrities. They, like, they're the poster children. They have to be represented. I think it was very, very sad, but I will tell you I know so many sad stories about Scientologists. I had a very dear friend in Chicago, Greg Bashaw, and you can Google him. He did he was on the level. I did a voiceover. He was the producer or the writer of a McDonald's commercial I was on, and I was just new into Scientology, and I could tell by the way he talked that he was a Scientologist. So we walked out in the hallway, and we both exchanged niceties, and I went, "Yeah, I think you've been in," you know, and he agreed, and we laughed about it, like, because we knew the lingo, the verbiage, you know, Orwellian type stuff, because they have a language all their own, Scientology does. And he was on OT. He finished OT7, which is a level that I was on, where you solo audit body thetans and clusters off of your body. And so he reached OT8. He had literally spent every dime he had. He was leaving work in Chicago. He was having trouble surviving in the sense that he felt like he was going crazy. And so he went back to Florida, to Clearwater, to handle this. And they escorted him off the property. And it wasn't – I found out this detail later when I did my show in Chicago. His sister, Laura, came to my show, sat in the front row, heard me on an interview on WGN, and met me in the lobby and sobbed her eyes out and said, "I have a letter from her brother that said the church told him to drop his body and pick up another one." Now, that I've heard from other people. My friend Biggie Reichert from Germany, she also committed suicide. Greg committed suicide. He was escorted off the property. He drove his car. He took some pills, and he was dead. So you know, the church thinks that, you know, just pick up another body. This body's not working for you. But they created the chaos, and they're not
yes.
willing to take responsibility for it. Nope.
Well,
I was on the level, and I felt like I was going crazy. I was auditing these entities, these alien life forms, hence the alien hands on my squeeze my cans thing. But you know, I felt like I was in my show. It shows me auditing OT7 and going, basically going psychotic. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you hear stories about that, everyone that's listening, because I was watching the ESO, and
mm-hmm.
one of the sisters, you know, she lost her dad to a heart attack. Her mom,
mm-hmm.
you know, basically says, "Screw you." And her brother broke his arm at like 4 or 5. And as a kid, oh, yeah, you have a broken arm. You're going to be pain. You're going to be a little, you know, not a brat, but when you're in pain, when you're a little boy and you broke your arm, you're not going to be normal. I mean, you're going to want your mom, and you just
right.
want to be, you know. And then when I found out that they blame the mother because you did something to cause your son to break his arm,
mm-hmm.
you caused mm-hmm. your kid to act out. And I'm, like, thinking in my head, He's 4 years old. What? You
yeah.
want him to be poor?
Well,
and then when I was watching more and more of her story, and then when I found out that the brother couldn't take it, he was in college, and he was away from Scientology, and he kept reading all these articles, you guys. And then, you know, he, you know, wrote one right before he died. And the thing
right.
that I cannot let go of is he committed suicide, but he was really good at math because he was on in ITT or whatever, and
mm-hmm.
he measured the how it would when he was gonna jump, how to do it to make sure he died without making sure he did it right. And I was watching it that night, and I'm like, and they all, you know, and that's what I wanted to ask you. When you got out, what was the final straw that said, I cannot do this anymore, and I'm out of there?
I was driving in my car. I had just finished a course that I hadn't finished it. It's the new Golden Age of Tech. I had to redo Dianetics course, the book. My daughter was in the cafe at Celebrity Center in Hollywood, and I used to leave her down in the cafe to run through the garden. She was 9 years old, 9 and a half, almost 10. And I had money on account. You know, that's where you have money on account. She just walks up and says, hey, you know, I want a cappuccino. So she was down there, and I had told them years before at Celebrity Center, my daughter's off limits. You cannot try to reg her. It's called regging for the C organization or anything. Just leave her alone. Just, you know, let her be a kid. So I pull in the car, and we're driving down the 101 freeway, and I look in the rearview mirror, and she says to me, Mommy, I don't want to go there anymore. And I said, what do you mean? I thought you liked it. And she said, they keep trying to take me. I said, what are you talking about? And she says, they want me to join. They want me to sign up. And I said, baby, you're only 9. And she said, yeah, but they said when I'm 18, I'm an adult and I can do what I want. And I said, they said that? And she said, yeah. And I said, and then she told me another story. And then we got back to it. And she said, I said, well, when you're 18, you are an adult and you could do what you want. And she goes, yeah, but then if I stay in, I won't be able to talk to you or my dad, you know, because I told her I wanted out. She told me she was scared. I said, you know what? I'm broke. I have spent almost $1 million and my adult life. I want to get out too. So it was my daughter, but also Carly, I don't know how many of your listeners, they'll get this. If you loved anybody, you want to tell them you love them and you're sorry for anything you've done before they die, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my dad was a firefighter for 35 years. I'm a daughter of from 10 children in Nebraska. So
wow.
So my father and my mom raised 10 kids, and great guy. I didn't realize he knew so much about Scientology until after he died. But on his deathbed, he had back pain, and he had elective surgery, and they punctured his lung. And he could not recover. It took him 8 months to die. But I got to tell my dad before he died that I was sorry, that I was out of the church. I literally spent 25 minutes in his hospice, in his room, just telling him thank you and all this stuff, because I knew I wasn't going to see him again, you know. And the tears were rolling down his cheek, and I just said, Daddy, I love you, and I'm so sorry I hurt you. And he, you know, he kissed me, and I was able to rectify that. But after he died, my mom found a box in the closet, my dad's closet, and inside the box were the What is Scientology book that I gave him and The Way to Happiness. And along with those were letters that he had written to bishops and clergy, and the Time magazine article, and information on cults and disconnection. But see, you understand that my dad was afraid to bring it up because he knew about disconnection, and he was afraid that I would disconnect with him, and I said, Dad, I would have never disconnected with my family. I love my family. My mom's doing great, but my, you know, I would have never left my family. I almost wish my dad would have said, hey, Dolly, because he always called me Dolly. Hey, get the hell out of there, you know. But it didn't happen that way, but at least I got to tell him I was sorry and that I was out of the church before he died.
Well, and yeah. I am so glad you listened to your daughter. I mean, most parents in Scientology, and it has been proven, if the kid's like, I don't want to be here anymore, I'm unhappy, they go, okay, in the morning, you're going to go get the paddle, and, you know, you're going to do the diagnostics, and you're going to be okay in the morning about going. You did the right thing by listening. Even if,
I will
you know
tell
what
you,
I mean, yes,
yeah.
You were feeling what you were feeling, but when your kid says, I don't want to do this, I don't want to go there, for you to listen to her and, like, get what she was saying and then make her feel bad about it, I just think that's a great thing. I was, you know, because people don't understand, the parents have no claims to the kid after 8 or 9. They will try to get their kid in. They will try and do all of this to do something in your contract on these kids. And that's why I really think Katie Holmes divorced Tom Cruise. Sue was like 6 or 7, so it was right before the cut off to that. Did you agree that it was one of the main reasons she got out is because she was scared that her daughter was...
And I tell you, on the list of people I want to see or meet in my life and have coffee is Katie Holmes' father. That, if there's anybody I could meet in this world, it would be Katie Holmes' father, because I, like my own father, my father was unable to talk to me about it, but Katie Holmes' father had the foresight and the knowledge to go, you know what, sweetie, we need to get the hell out of here. You know, I wanted to tell you that I know about a half a dozen people who are still in Scientology. They don't necessarily talk to me, but they don't want to be in. I mean, they talk to my daughter or you know, through my daughter. But they don't want to do Scientology, but their parents are in, and they have a sibling or a family member in the C organization, and they don't want to be cut off. So they play the game. They just play. It's in, you know, you just play along with it, and they and that's one of the reasons. I have one gal that texts me and says, "Hey, Mama Bear, are you home?" And I said, I'll gladly leave because she can't come in the house if I'm here because I'm declared a suppressive person. So I love her enough to go, you know what, I understand your situation and your parents are both in and your sister's in the Sea Org. I will leave the house just so that you can have that time with my daughter, you know. So, but there are people that are under the radar that maybe call themselves maybe to Scientology they're still in, but they're really not. I know several people who are, you know, under the radar, but I would never disclose their name, of course. But that's fear based, you know. Yeah,
and I mean, I've you know, Facebook and Twitter, some of them. You know, about, this got out of it. And, of course, they want to come on and talk about this. But they are not ready to because it just happened and they are free. And they are just probably scared. I mean, they didn't say this to me, but they are scared to, you know, lose their family. And when I had Sully Anuko on, you guys, his son and ex-wife was still in Scientology. 3 or 4 years ago, he finally gets to see his son, everyone, and he's in Vegas. And so Sully went a really good, nice hotel room in Vegas for them just to spend mm-hmm. time together. He dropped like $2,000 on that weekend for his son. Fast mm-hmm. forward to last year, his son called him and said, "Dad, are you watching the league? So how can you watch this?" And goes, "Well, mm-hmm. some of them are my friends, and yes, I'm watching it." But then Sully mm-hmm. goes, because Sully was posting some stuff on Facebook, but when the son was saying about, you know, some Facebook posts, and Sully's like, "Wait
right.
a moment. He's not, I mean, they are not on Facebook."
Mm-hmm.
I swear
mm-hmm.
to God, you guys can play back the episode on this. So the son
right,
hacked
right.
in to Facebook, people. The son, I don't know, hacked in. Scientology, that people that are still in are hacking into people's accounts and Twitters and doing that. And I feel so bad for Sully because he thought, okay, yes, I'm not in Scientology, but
yeah.
maybe my son and I can talk without ever talking about it.
Mm-hmm,
but when
mm-hmm.
the LSO came up and the son called him and goes, "Are you watching this bullshit?" He goes, "Yes, it's one of my friends, some of my friends." And the son goes, "Goodbye, Dad," and has to talk to him since. So,
yeah, that's
so
the church. That's the church at work. Yeah, that's the church at work. That's just, it's frightening. I mean, I was told not to look on the internet, read any black PR or the newspaper on the, you know, like if I had questions, in fact, when I was getting out, I had questions about certain individuals. They had a file on those individuals. They have dossier. You know, they say your folders are confidential, but until you speak out, they're not. I do want to bring up something that I think is really important. You know, all the shows and all the people that write about Scientology, and whether they're ex-Scientologists or just bloggers as such, there's one story that people don't hear enough about, and it's covered up because it hasn't been solved, and it's a story, and your listeners should Google on YouTube, Kyle Brennan. Victoria, it is so sad. Kyle Brennan was never in Scientology. His mother was never in Scientology. She's a nurse, I believe, in Virginia. Her ex-husband was a Scientologist, and her son went to visit his father. He took his meds, I believe it's antidepressants, and took him away from him abruptly. And you and I both know you don't take people off meds abruptly. But it's a story that you need to delve into, and I would love for you to interview Victoria Britton, because Kyle, her son, went to visit his father, and the next thing she got a phone call saying her son was dead, and it wasn't suicide. And there has been such cover-up, and there has not been enough light shined upon this story of this innocent woman who sent her son to go visit her ex-husband, and he doesn't come home. So just make a little note of that, and if your listeners could also look up Kyle Brennan on YouTube, and it's heart-wrenching, and I fully intend to get her story out even further as I'm continuing to write more stories and travel. Did you know I'm going back to overseas?
Oh, yeah. You wanted me to mention that. Yeah. So you're going overseas. So what are you going to be doing over there?
I didn't even tell you to mention it, but you knew I wanted you. You knew I wanted you to, because I want to tell your listeners that if they look up squeezemycans.com, I'm
mm-hmm.
going to start posting the shows, but I'm doing the Canada Fringe Festival in July through September, into September. I am going back to Ireland. There's a big protest, you know. I was in Ireland in December, and I did my show at a community center near a community center that Scientology opened up. Now, Scientology is infiltrating Ireland. I'm telling you, when I did a couple of these interviews, have you watched Stranger Things? Stranger Things on Netflix. They have a thing called the Upside Down. So you have this town in Indiana, and I equivocate that to Ireland, and the Upside Down is Scientology. And what they're doing is they're buying up property and opening up certain community centers, Narconons, different buildings, and they're infiltrating. They're not even hiring people from Ireland. They're bringing in, they're shipping people in, they're flying people in to work at these organizations, and they, it's called the bait and switch, I call it, and it's a very, it's happening right now, and I'm going back to Ireland, I'm doing the show there, I'm actively involved in the campaign in Ireland. I'm also, I have been called from Australia, I have contacts in Germany and Brussels, and, you know, I don't make money on my show. I either lose money or break even. But I still, you know, I still do voiceover and do odd jobs and stuff. But I'm traveling still around the United States and then Canada. But squeezemycans.com will have all the information. If they like the Facebook page, they'll see what's going on. And
yeah,
yeah. So, but it's very exciting because I'm also going into high schools and universities. I'm doing a master class in storytelling and putting up a solo show, as well as having the students then tech the show so they can set up the lighting, run the show. So it's kind of a win-win situation in the sense that I still have my theater roots. And then I wrote a cabaret show, and I'm performing. I'm working on that for to travel with as well. So it's all very exciting.
Yeah, you guys, please check out who, you know, website. But, okay, so you said you were going all over the United States and Canada. Okay, are you coming in Seattle?
I can tell you, yes, I'm working on Seattle, Portland, San Francisco. I'm going to be in Vancouver, but then I have a tentative booking that I have to drive. I have a camper van I'm getting, so I'm going to be living in a van for a couple years. But I have tentative bookings in other countries or other cities in the States, but I can't mention right now. I know for sure I'm booked in Chattanooga, and I'm waiting to hear from Austin, Phoenix, Vegas, Portland, and Wisconsin. I've been in Chicago twice, so I've done the show for 7 weeks in Chicago. I've done it in 4 venues in LA, and that's all without a producer, all without it's just, you know, help from my director. By the way, my director's name is Shirley Anderson, and she's a genius. She was able to make this into such a wonderful show that I have to give a shout out to her.
Well, yeah, I love, like we said at the top, I love the title of this, though. And when did you decide, like, oh, maybe I should do a whole, you know, show on this? When did you think, oh, okay, this means that, you know, I need to go, I need to talk about what happened, I need to let people know that Scientology is so effed up. When did you figure?
I told my daughter. My daughter asked me not to speak out about Scientology until she graduated high school. So I honored her wishes. I started writing pieces on my experience, and then I started doing performance pieces in bars and coffee shops around. And it was a friend of mine in New York, a playwright named Sean Grennan, who is a wonderful playwright. He contacted me on Facebook and said, listen, girl, you have to do a solo show. Now, my background is in musical theater, so the church told me I could sing and dance next lifetime, sing and act next lifetime. And I was like, okay. So I stopped doing my theater career and went full force into Scientology. But Sean Grennan was the one who said, you know what, you have a show here, because he was listening to my podcast and my storytelling. And so he mentored me for about 3-4 months. We still talk probably weekly. And I started piecing together the puzzle of the show, and basically that's how it started. I started with 7-minute pieces. You know how I host storytelling when I travel, because I love seniors, and I go to senior centers and I sing and I interview the people in retirement areas, and anybody can tell a story. We all have a story to tell. It's just having the courage to get up and tell it. So I have found my purpose in life, even though when I got into Scientology, I was looking for a purpose in life to help others, and I got sidetracked, Carly. So now, I'm older, and now I've come into my own, and I have this purpose in life, and I'm very, very happy.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's good that you're happy, but I think what you're doing is so right on, because, you know, you and I mean, a bunch of people in the, no mainstream media will pick up what is really going on, and what I have a problem with E! News, Entertainment Tonight, they ask the Scientology people that are in, are you watching the show? And they go, I won't watch that. If I was that reporter on the red carpet, I would have just not let that go. I'm like, okay, so why won't you watch it? And what is Scientology? Please, because anyone that does interviews, you guys who are in Scientology, they will not tell you what it's really about. They keep going, it will help you in every aspect of your life. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the media, too, I have a problem with is wake up. Yes, you're on the red carpet. It's supposed to be fun, whatever. If you don't ask the question, then when are you going to ask them? And that's why I kind of been doing more.
Well, you know, the media is hushed. The media is hushed. When Tom Cruise's publicist meets with an interviewer before he has an interview, they give you them a list of questions they cannot ask. Otherwise, they wouldn't do the interview. No, that's all set up beforehand. You cannot talk about this. You cannot talk about that. That's very Hollywood. That's a publicist in charge. You know, so I've never experienced that. I have the freedom to speak my mind, but I also know for a fact that they have people, making sure everything's status quo.
Well, of course. And, it's so funny because I've done so many interviews, and yes, I usually ask if there's something you don't want to talk about or whatnot. And usually everyone I've had on the show says, go for it, say whatever, please. So,
We were suppressed. We were suppressed not to speak out. You'd have to go to ethics. So the freedom to speak freely is so lovely. Now, it can get some of us in trouble because just like in anything, there's a differing of opinion. Even ex-Scientologists believe in different things. So who are we to judge? I try to be as tolerant as possible, and I practice, my religion is hopefully kindness. I fail all the time, but I try every day when my feet touch the floor to be grateful and to be thankful for what I have. Not everybody's going to like me, but that's okay because I have to love myself first. Before, and trust me, the self-love thing is a really tough thing for me. I battle with it all the time because of regret. And so the therapy that I have is yoga and hiking and writing. So, and a little wine now and then.
Well, come on, you need the wine.
Yeah.
But when we first started and you were talking about, you know, your brother that, you know, was in that car accident, I am so sorry. But I got what you were saying about, you know, everyone said, oh, you know.
God chose him.
You know, okay, so I will get a little personal. So my grandfather died, and I was 17. And he just had a quadruple bypass, and the doctor stupidly told me, Carly, don't worry, he's going to be around for the next 20 years. Don't worry, everything's fine.
And
I go down there for Christmas, and he's acting really strange, like he's giving up, like, all the Christmas presents back and telling me, I will not be here for your sister's wedding. Oh, my uncle's wedding, his son. And I looked at him, I go, no, you're not going to go fishing and leave me and have this wedding with everyone when I'm going to be bored out of my mind. And he kept saying, I'm not going to be here. My thing was, why? What are you going to do? What in the hell are you going to do? And he kept saying, I won't be here. And I took that as he was going to do something stupid. And
Maybe he knew. Maybe he just had an intuition that he wasn't going to be around.
Exactly. So I end up, it was New Year's. The next day, we had to go back to school. And my family's from Oregon, and we moved up to Seattle. So the day of the 13th, January 13th, day I was not feeling good. I knew something was about to happen. I could not put my finger on it. And I'm in drama class. And I'm like, I had to run to this side of the door and throw up. And everyone's like, well, are you having stage fright again? I go, no, I have a migraine. Something is about that going to happen. And they kept saying, we are in drama. Don't be a drama queen. And I'm like, you guys, something bad is about to happen. I don't know what it was. So I get home. I lay down. And I called my grandfather at 5 because we always bet.
Right. Are you there? Where did you go? There? Where are you? Carly, I lost you, hon.
My Swiss boat went crazy. So, my Swiss boat went crazy on me.
Oh, well, you know what? I got the tail end of it when you were
talking about
your
grandpa.
What
I was going to say was, my grandma said, I don't want to get up. She was laying down. I will have him call you, and you can place your bed. And I kept saying, get up, go to the kitchen and see if he, bring in the phone. And she goes, no, I will. So an hour later, the phone rings. And my grandmother goes, because my mom and dad was out and my brothers were home. And she said, I need you to talk, I need you to get your brother. I go, why can you tell me? Because he knew I was going to explode. And so she told my brother is not telling me Zach said what's really going on. And an hour and a half later, my uncle calls. And he goes, mm-hmm. Oh, well, your grandfather is in a coma. And I'm like, what? Wait. How does it go from I don't get to talk to him to, you know, a coma? Well, he was brain dead, but they did not want to tell me that yet.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I said, well, don't turn on the life support off. You know, I got to get there. And they kept saying, mm-hmm. you know what, don't, no, come in the morning. And they turned off the machine. And then
mm-hmm.
he ended up dying of a brain aneurysm.
Oh,
and
so
I feel like you, Karen. I was so angry at God. I'm like, okay,
mm-hmm.
why did you let this happen? How could you just, you know, let this happen when the doctor said he was fine? And so when
mm-hmm.
you said about your brother, I got
mm-hmm.
what you were saying because, you know, stuff like that happens. If someone dies and you don't know what to do with it, you're like, okay,
mm-hmm. right.
I don't believe in that God anymore. I don't know what I believe. And so I understand how you were trying to find your purpose in life and, you know, you were trying a different religion. And so, you know, and my question, my follow-up question is, since, what was the year that you got out of Scientology? That's why I keep forgetting to ask you.
Well, I started questioning things in 2004, and I got out in 5 years later. So I got declared a suppressive person in 2011. So by 2009, I was out. I was not practicing. Mm-hmm. So from 91, 91. So 14 years and then another 5 years. So nearly two decades, you know. But you know what? It's and Carly, I have to tell you, it's not. And I say this a lot, and a lot of people say this. It's not the money. The money is whatever. I make $15,000 a year. I make barely enough to. Well, I try to make enough to make insurance because I still pay for my daughters. It's the time. So time is precious in, for all of us. So. And for that, on that note, I take a yoga class at 7:30, and we're on the West Coast time, my darling.
Okay.
We've been talking
yeah,
over an hour. Can
you know,
believe it?
You know, I would love to have you back, because I think there's
mm-hmm.
more we need to cover. And
mm-hmm.
if you could email me or let me know about that Victoria person, if
yes.
you know her, I would love to interview her if she'd want to talk about what happened. I would love
mm-hmm.
having her on the show. And go
I
yoga,
to
go
that.
Relax. But please email me before you go overseas so I can let everyone know to come and see you overseas. And, you know, when you
mm-hmm.
are back in the U.S., so I can let people know when
I
you are due on mm-hmm. the, you know, on the States. You know, the United States.
Oh, my darling, you're so sweet. And I will definitely email you, and I want to thank you. And the next time we talk, we'll open it up to listeners. Because I think there might be more questions and stuff. But I love sharing the word, and I love my biggest passion is enlightening other young people who may fall prey to the church or have questions about it. So my purpose
yeah,
in life
and,
has changed.
You know, I am so happy you're coming back. And just remember, when you go overseas, remember, don't pack a lot. But they might take your iPhone away during the flight now. I don't know if they are doing that with the electronics. I heard that. But if
no,
I was going
I just
on that.
Back from a, yeah. They're being pretty good, but I take my computer, I take everything, but I am having to mail stuff because I'm doing the show.
That's good,
yeah.
But yes, I want to have you back on, but get to yoga and go yoga out, and yes,
uh-huh.
we will get you back on, and then the next time you come on, we can take questions.
That sounds lovely. I
okay,
really
have a great night.
You. You're lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carly. Take
okay,
care.
Have
Bye-bye.
A great night.
Bye. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Okay.
Carly?
Yeah.
Oh.
You guys, thank you for hearing the whole hour of the show. What did you, how did you guys like it?
It was interesting.
Well, of course, David. Of course, Bobby, you agree with. But did you like how I did the interview?
Yeah, you did very well. I mean, we lost you for a couple of minutes, but I'm glad that I thought for a minute with Blog Talk about ready to cut all of our lines off.
Well,
yeah,
yeah and then
scare me, scare me.
Oh, I just want to say that we are having a show on Friday. Nathan Bode is coming on. He will be taking Twitter questions and Facebook questions. So when everyone is done with that, I mean, please Twitter and Facebook me your Twitter question for Nathan. And then, yeah, we will do that on Friday, and we will also, you know, have a little soap. Thing, because by now if we do, I think I'm going to lose my voice. And,
right. Well,
but I
well,
just want
to
say,
right.
I just want to say, I just want to say, Abby Kill Andre, Abby the Little Moodoo, Abby
mm-hmm.
has a
yeah.
multi-personality.
Yeah, but, I was going to say right now, Carly, the way Ron have done a horrible job, according to what you said on Dave, by bringing people back from dead, now he's going through the same thing that ended One Life to Live. He did this with Bree Williamson with her chess character by putting Tess in the picture and then bringing back Vicky for Nikki. Now he's doing this for Marcy Miller's character, Abby Gal, and bringing Gabby. If Dave's in the show in One Life to Live, then Lord knows that we
well, I feel
blank.
Like, I feel like
oh,
this,
yes, get him, Pete.
This,
Brian,
this,
going,
okay, this
going,
is a year, you know what Ron is writing, we saw the last year in two of One Life to Live. So, you know what, Ron, you better start telling stories that you've already haven't done, the multi-personalities, has been done. All of that's been done. Right, Bobby?
Exactly.
Okay.
And
okay, one thing. Brian Fowles killed Brian's not Ron.
Oh, my Brian's God. Live. Okay, you know what, David?
Brian Fowles.
You
Brian
need to know. No. Yes, Fowles had a thing to do with it. But
yes,
why
not
all,
Ron
Ryan. I mean, One Life to Live writing was bad the last year. Right, Bobby?
Well, yes, and I point fingers to, and I think I blame for having Wendy Williams, Snoop Dogg, and Kourtney Kardashian as gay players on the show. I mean, I admire what Snoop has done as an actor, a rapper, a game show host, etc. But as far as just causing the ratings to go downhill for One Life to Live on ABC and. Well, I don't know. And we can point fingers from having so many celebrities.
Also, question, why did the rating grid go up to number two behind Bowling Before? It didn't go down.
You know
what?
And Bobby will agree with me, because Bobby loves me, that, you know what? Ron better stop writing stuff that we do not see on One Life to Live. Ron needs to get his ass working on not a gay storyline because he did that on One Life to Live. Not
okay,
a multi-personality thing. Okay, we've seen that on One Life to Live. Ron, why don't you get off your ass and write something that we haven't seen any before? Write,
okay.
Bobby.
Oh, Dean Higgins, write the start of the
exactly.
day for that. Dean Higgins, start the day for that. And
Ron another thing, too, about Ron. He made Star go from being a bad sea of brat to being a good girl and a sweetheart going into her days on General Hospital. Is there a way we can do the same? If there a way she can do the same thing for Sierra? I mean, for this Sierra. I mean, it seems like with this Sierra, it's going back to when she was 10 years old, like, or in real time, 3-4 years ago.
Well, you know, yeah, and I totally agree with you, Bobby. And I'm Sue. We are going to talk about this more on Friday because, Bobby, don't you hear my voice waiting to go out?
Right. Right. It's getting late for me, too, because, like your guess, I'm going to have to just go, but it's not for yoga lessons.
Just
for me to go to bed.
Will you be back?
Before I go, but I'm unfortunately going to be going to a hockey game on Friday, so unfortunately I won't be doing that. But I will tweet you, I will IM you tomorrow a question that you can just give to Nathan concerning about will Maxie on GA find a new love now that Nathan's gone.
Tweet me that tomorrow. David, if you have any questions for Friday, just email the Twitter or Facebook me, and we are going to end the night because Carly doesn't want to lose her voice.
Right.
So have a great night, and you guys suck out my interview that I did at the top of the show with Kathy Sunderberg. It was a really good interview. And have a great night, everyone.
I agree. And I'm sorry I was unable to talk. Bye.
Bye.